Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, if you're listening to My Good Bad Brain for the first time, check us out at patreon.com/mygoodbadbrain. And, you know, if you like the show, leave us a review. That's really helpful. Tell your friends. All right, theme song. Bye.
Welcome to My Good Bad Brain. I'm a normal person, so I'm insane. I've got depression and ADHD, but I'm doing better since I medicated me. Still not always sure whether I exist or what being a person even really is. But I figured out a long time ago that being alive is beautiful.
Hello. It's my good bad brain time, my friends. My sweet, 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 sweet internet friends. I've been getting really nice messages from some of y'all, and I just wanted to say thank you for that up front. When people reach out to me randomly and say that this podcast means something to them or makes a difference to them, man, that fucking rules, you know? Just makes me feel like we're really all connected, you know? It just keeps me on my bullshit, meaning like working on myself, trying to stay true to, you know, positive habits and whatnot, and making actual efforts to like stick to my best practices and take care of myself, and you know, keep making my way through the world with this good bad brain, because I know there's other people out there who I don't even know who are listening and trying as well, and it's resonating. So you know, that rules. And thank you, you know, if you go out of your way to do that ever. I know I don't probably receive every message that is sent my way, but I think I get a lot of them. I'll keep trying. Anyway, and you know what? If you love the podcast and check out the Patreon. I really don't promote enough, I don't think, for like quote unquote best practices. But, you know, it's because this is just my own little weird space to work on this with y'all. And I don't like to question it too much or give it too much structure. That being said, today's guest on the podcast that we talk with is a good friend of mine named, patreon.com/mygoodbadbrain, if I didn't, okay. Corey DeMyers is my buddy, and he comes on the podcast today. And I'll say this during the podcast too, but Corey's like a good friend who I wouldn't have expected to ever have as a guest on a mental health podcast, which is a silly thing to say. I guess if I could have thought it out, I would have guessed, you know, anybody could be a guest. Because that's the whole point, is that we're all like, we all got something. We're all like doing our best and trying, you know. And I met him because he's a stunt guy. I did a music video I acted in a while ago, and he was a stunt coordinator on it. And we just stayed pals. We've collaborated on some different projects since then. And I don't know, I'm sure we will a bunch in the future. He's just one of those few people I really, really enjoy the presence of, and I love working with. And and you know, like in creative professions, you know, at some point when you start getting older, you know, it's harder and harder to find people who are just like maniacs who love it and just want to like work on stuff because it makes them laugh or they think it's cool, or you know, just some creative impulse, like kind of how we create when we start out, maybe, you know. And he's like that, and I really like that about him. But he was telling me that his wife really likes the podcast a little while ago, and he appreciates me doing it, and I was like, oh yeah, totally. And he said he liked it, and somehow one thing or another, I got the sense that he, you know, might have some resonance with it also. And like there's this question about like how do we get through our lives, what's our brains doing, blah blah. And I was like, you know, just got that feeling, and I was like, do you have like stuff, like mental stuff, you know? And he was like, oh yeah, oh yeah. And so that was like back, that was months ago, and I was like, all right, well, let's do it, let's have a talk sometime, because I'd love to hear your perspective. Like, he's a very physical person. He was this like parkour competitor actually before going full-time stunt guy and doing all this stuff, lifelong martial artist. He doesn't have any like diagnosed anything, and I think that's an important thing. I would say the overarching main big topics that we get into here maybe are like being children of divorce and maybe some codependency that comes out of that. Yeah, I think that's kind of where we end up. I don't know. I felt like whenever I have pals on here, sometimes we unpack and I realize, well, no wonder we resonate with you. You know, like there's some similarity in how we are and how we got to be this way. So we talk a lot about codependency and being children of divorce and how that maybe creates a way in which we isolate ourselves or try to make everybody around us happy, but never really feel connected to anyone, even though we love them very much. You know, we create this sort of safe distance, and how we maybe sabotage ourselves a little bit with that by having a fear of commitment that we don't really want to acknowledge. So the result is we never focus on our own dreams, because if we committed to our dreams, they might disappoint us, or we might disappoint ourselves, or some fear of failure that isn't there when we work on other people's projects. But maybe we subconsciously hold ourselves back, and how that ties in, you know, on like entertainment, obviously, and like creative endeavors, but how that also is like maybe in relationships, and maybe, you know, how you just kind of like have difficulty committing to some things because you're afraid that they will fail you and disappoint you, and how you can like live your whole life with that sort of pattern. And I also think, you know, I use this analogy later in the podcast, but I was thinking about like, I think I am going to be having more people on who don't necessarily have like, you know, some doctor diagnosed mental, you know, whatever. I never know which word. Like I said, I kind of like disorder, I think is fine for me, but I don't know. But don't have diagnosed disorders, because I think everybody, literally everybody, experiences this sometimes. And that's why the question about mental health is so important. Just like our regular, you know, our respiratory system, everybody gets colds at some point in their life. Everybody has periods of non-chronic mental illness, I think. And, you know, so it's really valuable to me to hear like how people get through who aren't diagnosed. Because I wasn't diagnosed by a psychiatrist till I was like 32, you know, 31, 32, something like that. So does that mean I didn't have it before? Of course not, you know? So yeah, that's going to be a thing that happens more often. And I'm just going to get out of the way of this, and I'm going to let you start listening to Corey and I just have an afternoon chat. Again, thank you so much if you reach out to me, if you leave reviews for the show, if you give us money at patreon.com/mygoodbadbrain. All of that just makes such a huge difference and keeps this thing rolling. Yeah. All right. Well, thanks, guys. I hope you enjoyed this conversation with the wonderful Corey DeMeyer. All right. Great. Cool. We're recording now. All right. Hey, Corey.
Hey, what's up, bro?
All right. So I just thought we did this thing just now that I do sometimes on this podcast, where usually when I'm going to talk to somebody, I do like do a little pre-talking to like loosen up or whatever. And then, but we just did that for like 2 hours and then.
Oh, totally.
Because
yeah.
We had to catch up a little bit.
Our pre-talking was hours of entertainment.
And then I was doing more of like the more related to the mental health part of the podcast, or part of the podcast, part of the hang, whatever the podcast, pre-talk. And then I was like, oh, this is good stuff. I'll just record while we go. So basically, a lot of people that I have on the show, there is some specific thing that they can say. I have depression and ADHD, or like whatever. We just did one with like someone's like, it has borderline and anorexia, whatever. But they have already gotten mental health help and blah, blah. With you and some other people I've had on the show too, a lot of people I think have like, basically my hypothesis is that everybody struggles with mental health stuff. Being a person, like you struggle with it, and that even I wish I had gone to a psychiatrist earlier in my life at this point, because
it really has helped me being with some medication and kind of looking at it in that way. But before that, just because I had never had somebody say, a doctor to me, like, you have depression or you have this thing, doesn't mean I wasn't experiencing that and couldn't like identify that like I have, there's something that's hard for me and that every person struggles with that kind of stuff. And you, Corey DeMeyers, who, well, I'm going to do a little intro for you before we get into this, but that you're not going to be here for. But but basically, you're my buddy for a while now. You're a stunt guy. We met through entertainment and things like that. And you know, I think typical like stunt guy, athletic kind of people and that kind of professionally athletic people or action-oriented people, whatever, nobody like thinks of them as like, I think probably because you think of people in that like life as like physical. I think that, you know, even with athletes, when there's like tons of evidence of like depressed athletes and stuff like that, not getting into the CTE part of it, but like,
right,
you don't think of people in those lives as people who like struggle with that kind of stuff in the stereotypical idea of like who has depression or something like that. And I just remember we were talking a while ago, like months ago, we had lunch and we were talking about doing this podcast and you had said that you liked it or that your wife liked it or something like that. And I was saying, oh, thank you. And we were talking and you basically, I don't remember what it was specifically, but you were like, yeah, definitely. It's just like good. And there was something to the hint of it that I was like, oh, and I was like, do you like have stuff, whatever? And I remember you just had this look on your face and you were just like, oh yeah. Oh yeah. And you like, were like nodding and making this feels like, yeah. And I was like, oh, okay. I didn't know that. Would you like to be on the show sometime? Cause I thought it'd be interesting because even I wouldn't be like,
right,
oh, Corey struggled with,
well,
fucked up shit.
Well, I think that's
shit.
The thing, like you said, with mental health, dude, is it's, I think everybody does struggle with mental health issues on one level or another. And,
right,
and some people maybe are better at dealing with it on their own.
Yeah.
Other people are better at hiding it, you know? Cause you, I mean, that's, it's so internal that you would never know, you know,
yeah.
It just depends on how it physically manifests itself.
Yeah. Well, that's, so that brings us to where we are now. We're like finally getting down. You were out of town for a while working on, we were all just whatever. And so I'm glad to have you here. But I guess that's sort of like the themes I wanted to talk about are, I know you mentioned imposter syndrome and I want to talk about the idea of imposter syndrome a little bit. And I want to talk about basically though, this broader idea of the quote unquote undiagnosed mental disorder thing that like mental, there's like, okay, I think maybe a way to think about it would be like some people just with regular physiological health, like, you know, well-being of your organism physically, like not talking about the brain part or the sort of subjective experience of your life, like wellness and illness can kind of be defined as like acute and chronic, where like everybody gets colds. Everybody gets like a virus or an infection now and again and blah, blah, and they have it and they have to recover from it. Some people will have a chronic thing where like from like diabetes or whatever, you have something that you're born with or that you get early in life that's like, that's going to be something you have your whole life and you're going to have to deal with. And I almost feel like mental health can be thought of in a similar way where like just because you might not be diagnosed as somebody who has you have ADHD, you have depression, and it's a thing that you're gonna have to live with and manage your whole life, and it's very chemical and chronic. Just because you don't have that doesn't mean like, just because I don't have diabetes doesn't mean I'm not gonna get a cold or a flu that's gonna fuck me up sometimes and can be like really threatening sometimes if it's serious and untreated. I had like a staph infection years ago that like ended up in the hospital for 3 days. So I think it's interesting to think of mental health from that perspective and not be like you either have it or you don't, or you're you know, because obviously, yes, we can just say, yes, every person has something they struggle with at some point, but getting even more specific than that, like, and again, I'm not a professional. You're not a professional from a mental health standpoint. But as people, I think that one can experience mental health struggles, whether they're triggered by an outside factor or environmental or just in your lived experience, in acute ways that are just as real. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
So I guess like, what are your, yeah, what my first question for you was just going to be like kicking off from there. Like, what was it when you, what was it that I detected and that led to you being like, oh yeah, oh yeah, that was like, you should come talk on this show. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I think it was what we were just talking about, like in our little prep, and then we realized we should just be recording all of this stuff. Mm-hmm. I think it was when you asked me if I had ever struggled with mental health or depression. The first thing that I thought about was when I was probably 12 or 13 years old.
Yeah.
And I remember, like, I got along, I grew up in a small town in Michigan, just outside of Flint. And I was friends with all the different cliques. Like I played sports, I did martial arts, but like I got along with everybody and I hung out with everybody. But for some reason or another, I never actually felt like I really belonged in any of those micro communities within my school.
Yeah.
And I was in homeroom. We used to have to watch this 15 minute, like kids news show in homeroom like every day. And I remember one of the news anchors came on, they were talking about depression, how it's affecting young people. And I went home and I was like, oh shit. Like exactly what they were talking about in this special is exactly how I'm feeling.
Do you remember any of like the stuff they said?
It was like a feeling of not belonging and a disconnect from people. And I love people, right? Yeah. But I didn't feel connected to any of the people that I was around. And I was a little bummed out and sad all the time. And although I was super energetic, I was very mentally drained all the time. Things that weren't a big deal were weighing really heavy on me. And I was like 12 or 13 years old. And then you also think like, am I just an angsty teenager? Like, am I just going through, is it a phase where I'm just overwhelmed by the world because it is a crazy big place and I'm just this little boy and I'm starting to try to understand it and comprehend it.
Yeah.
And I brought it up to, I remember bringing it up to my mother, who was a single mother of two. At the time I lived with my mom and my grandmother, and you know, she's always the person who is there for you, wants to help you, will listen to you. But there was something about the idea of a young boy being depressed that I don't know if it was, it's not that it wasn't taken seriously, but maybe it was a little bit of denial.
Yeah.
Right. And eventually I did get an opportunity to talk to somebody, but it was more centered around the idea of being a child of divorce. And I never really felt like the divorce.
Therapy,
therapy for kids, you know, who have gone through a divorce with their parents. And I never thought it wasn't the idea of not having my mother and father living together and them being split up. I always felt like there was another reason I was feeling this way and I didn't really know what it was.
Yeah.
You know? And through the years I've just found it to continue to manifest itself in several different ways or sparks.
That sense of like lonely in rooms full of people kind of things.
Absolutely. Lonely in a room full of people or even it comes out as this feeling that like I'm never going to accomplish like the things that I wanted to accomplish in my life. Mm. Right. Like there's so much that I aspire to, but like these overwhelming feelings like, yeah, but that's never going to happen. Right.
Like a voice that automatically goes, you're not going to do that. That's not going to happen.
Yeah. Right. And then this last couple of years, like I was telling you, it started to feel like it manifested itself in like this imposter syndrome. And it's not like what the clinical definition of that syndrome would be, but
we could look at it on Wikipedia. So might as well just read it. If you just have it there,
but you know, like, and I think the one thing that in my life had been a constant through a lot of these feelings is when I keep myself busy, it keeps me from listening to that voice in the back of my head. And although I love to be busy and I love to create, like I often wonder, is that why I try to stay so busy that I don't have time to stop and think, is so I don't have to,
I mean, even like
contemplate these thoughts.
Yeah. Even the micro of your profession is so like physical and demands your like present focus, like to do parkour and things like that.
Right.
It's like, there's really no room for like giving a lot of time to thoughts of doubt and thoughts of, you know, because you've got to like jump out of a building window or you've got to land on a ledge and not fall. Or, you know what I mean? Like these things demand a presence. And I mean, I'm just resonating. That resonates with me. And I guess my question would be like, is that part of your thing with it? For me, like all of my physical culture life, like all the jujitsu and all the things, a lot of that has to do with like being in a moment that like takes me so into that moment that I can't like, you know, my conscious thoughts that might be destructive don't have any space.
Oh, totally. And I think that like maybe part of it's a form of self-medication, right? Is like
for sure
using the creative outlet and the intense focus it takes to like do these things that we're doing in our lives, whether it be like the physical creation of something in jiu-jitsu or martial arts or parkour and action sequence, or taking all of your focus into writing this project, producing, directing this project. It is it is something you love to do, right. But doing it to a very intense manner helps keep your mind busy so you don't feel like shit.
Yeah,
like when you sit still with your thoughts, you know?
Yeah. Say that again. Like that reality of like, dude, that is so real. Like the scariness of like that when I stop, like what's it going to say in the silence?
Oh, dude. And right now is a great example. It's only been 2 weeks. And I told my wife the other day, I'm like, I just got off this show. I was out of LA for 4 months working on this show and I didn't have time to think about shit. And you kind of escape your reality, even though you escape your everyday, right? And you're out of your own reality for a while you're working on this project. And then I come home and I'm super excited to see her and my little dog. And we spent time with family. But like toward the end of the 2 weeks, I'm like, babe, I'm fucking going crazy right now. And she's like, what do you mean? I was like, I just need to work. And it's not because I need the money. Like, it's not like I just feel like a piece of shit. And she's like, what do you just worked for 4 months straight and you did a great job and you killed it. And you made progress in your career and you are doing what you love. And I am. But like, I'm afraid of sitting with myself, not because I'm afraid I'll do something stupid, but I'll talk myself into it like a mental hole, right? Mm-hmm. And I'll sit there and in the silence, I'll start to think like, well, how did I get here? Do I deserve this? Why do I deserve this? Like, is this real? Is this a fluke? Am I going to get booked on another job like this? Or did they book me thinking one thing, but I'm not really the guy they thought I was? And then, you know, like, and I just go down this rabbit hole.
Doubt. Read the, do you have the thing open for this imposter syndrome thing?
Yeah. So like for, and maybe this is something that you brought up to me like within this last year, but I never knew what it was called, but per Wikipedia, imposter syndrome, also known as imposter phenomenon, imposterism, fraud syndrome, or the imposter experience, is a psychological pattern in which an individual doubts their accomplishments and has a persistent internalized fear of being exposed as a fraud.
Mm-hmm.
Despite external evidence of their competence, those experiencing this phenomenon remain convinced that they are frauds and do not deserve all they have achieved. Individuals with imposter syndrome incorrectly attribute their success to luck or as a result of deceiving others into thinking they are more intelligent than they perceive themselves to be. While early research focused on the prevalence among high achieving women, imposter syndrome has been recognized to affect both men and women equally.
Yeah, that's for sure that I've felt that way forever.
Right?
I mean, I still feel that way.
And it's like,
I mean, I feel that way a lot less, honestly. I've talked with that. I've spent time. So my thought was, one thing is like, do you ever, I know people who like tell me they don't like yoga. Like they'll do Pilates or do whatever. They're like, I can't do yoga. It's just too, I can't like sit in that stillness or stay in poses like that long. And those, I'm always like, oh, you should do yoga. Like the people who have that feeling
definitely
are usually the ones that should do it. And I don't know. I wonder if you might like get something out of, sitting in that discomfort and negotiating with those voices to like, I don't know. Cause for me, the imposter syndrome stuff, as I've tried to burn out like my weird shit over the last couple of years and figure out what's going on is like definitely still comes up, but, and maybe it has to do with knowing a lot of amazing people I'm close to, like Allie or people in my life that like have the same voices of self-doubt and seeing them and being like, oh, look at like objectively how wrong you are. Like, you know, blah, 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 blah. Like I can show you a million pieces of evidence that say like, you're not an imposter. Maybe seeing that enough has allowed me to like talk to myself and go like, that's it. Like I've had this thing. I always think of like, if you can approach your world and yourself with curiosity instead of judgment. And if you can like basically live in inquiry so that when a thought like that comes up, that's like, oh, you're a fucking fake. People are going to figure out that you're a fake or like you didn't do a good job on the last job. And when they said like, good job, you kind of see in their eyes and their face, they were saying it because they thought that had to be nice, but they didn't really mean it. And that kind of like feeling, you know, and you just start running like that. You know, basically, I would just have this inquiry thing of like, is that true? Well, is that true? And like, just trying to answer that and being like, well, probably not because of this, this, and this. And it's equally as true that they love me completely and they meant what they said. Like, why do I give validity to the fake one? And I think part of it has to do with growing up and being deeply affected by culture and people in our personal lives who we perceive to be, who are imposters, who are liars, who are like Donald Trump, who are like people who just like double down and double down and evidently do bad jobs at things, but then they go like, no, I didn't, I'm so fucking good. And somehow people
continue
just
to
like
find success.
Yeah.
Right.
That you go like, oh, so I can't believe that things I do are good just because I'm succeeding or because look at all these other fucking idiots. Like, but the weirdness of why does your brain validate that and not validate the equally possible reality that it is true that you are good at something.
Right. You know? And I think like you just said something about like self-doubt. Right. And right. I think self-doubt is, I think almost everybody has self-doubt. Like if you don't ever right. doubt yourself on some level or another,
right.
like you're probably not a human.
Right. Right.
Right. And I think
but it's
maybe
like what quality does
yeah,
that doubt
and that's
take?
Why I say like I don't think I have imposter syndrome, but I think I have I've experienced a lot of the symptoms of it. But it's very much centered around that self doubt, right? And I think some people carry more than others. And like I was saying, like if I keep trucking, I don't think about these things, right? Like it just keeps it off right. my mind because I try to stay focused on something else, and I don't ever give myself the chance
right.
to be
but
still,
it's
like you said,
uncomfortable to yeah. know that like. Should the circumstances shift? I just never like the feeling that, which is why I avoided medication for so long too. And I still sometimes have conflict over it. It's like, I never wanted to feel like any outside factor was going to command how I felt about myself.
Totally.
Meaning if there's no work though, then what I had this moment that always stuck with me that like really, like I still think about it, fucked me up, like dad stuff, where like I was in the car with my dad after my dad got disbarred from being a lawyer, and we were in the car and he was like in the hardest time of his life, and it was hard for like, we were all kids, and he was like the darkest period of life where he was like really drug addicty and weird and all this stuff. And I remember I was in the car with him, he was driving, and there was this weird moment where he goes like, you know, a lot of people, you ask them who they are and they'll tell you their job, like, you know, like you know what I mean? Like that's their identity.
Oh, dude.
He goes, to tell you that they tell you your job. He goes, I was a lawyer for 15 years and now I'm not. And there was just this weird silence. And I was like, fuck, I never want to feel so identified with things outside of me that if they go away, then I'll be like, what the fuck am I? And that to me is like, that's the fear I think about, like knowing like, okay, as long as I keep moving, I'm good. But the fear of like, ooh, I can't always control that though. And maybe like, then you want to like explore like, so how do I be good even in the stillness, you know?
I think that's like I think that's a great piece of advice. And even like you said, like live life in and look at yourself from a place of inquisition, right?
Yeah.
Is like be inquisitive, like ask questions. Don't judge yourself necessarily, but try to find out why, right? Well, why did I do that? Why do I think that? Like, where is this coming from?
Right.
It gets to the root of the problem. It's like the difference between, you know, like just putting a Band-Aid on it and really trying to fix it, you know?
Yeah.
And,
well, you said your child, you divorced parents?
Yeah.
When did that happen?
When I was, I want to say, like officially six, I want to say like my parents like actually split up when I was like six or seven. It was like finalized. And I lived with my mom, my little sister, who's like 4.5 years younger than me. And then my grandmother moved in with us. And so it was like me and three girls. It was like me, my mom, my sister, and my grandmother.
And actually I didn't know that. And that explains maybe a lot of why I like you. Cause one of the things we were talking about before this was like, how I'm so selective about people that I'm close with. And one of the toughest things for me is to find people with that masculine feminine balance, because like I have these like really bro-y like passions, but sometimes being around it too much, I'm like, they're just like so dude and so like toxic male and so like not woke and all this, that you just like, sometimes you just can't, even people I get along with, they'll be like, I don't like hanging out with them. But like you have this weird balance of like positivity and kindness and like creativity and like, you know, of your sort of spirit and mood around you, while also understanding all the appeal of like this boy stuff of like,
yeah, I mean, I lived with women fighting my whole life, but I grew up since I was like 5 years old doing martial arts.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So I just interesting to know, just on a personal level.
Yeah. There is like a balance between like, you know, I mean, Yeah, I guess I lived like a fairly balanced life in that respect growing up, you know.
But the thought I had, the wonder I had, the reason I said the divorce thing was because I am also a child of divorce. It happened a little later for me. I think they officially separated probably when I was like 12 or 13 or something like that, maybe a little later. And then and it dragged on for years before the court stuff was all done. And it was like, but they, you know, and I do when I do my own sort of like therapy and exploration of like what are my wounds and what are my core beliefs around like who I am and how the world works. I really do think in a very cheesy Freudian kind of way that like I had this idea, I used to always just say like, oh yeah, I know you stand on rugs so that they are pulled out from under you. Like not just because, not like just that like you stand on them and then they might be or then they will be, but like that's why they're there, is to disappoint you, is to like fuck you up. And I trace a lot of my core insecurities and beliefs about like the world is full of liars and like imposters and I'm probably one too and blah, blah. And like a lot of my core beliefs about relationships and stuff for a while. I truly believe go back to like, oh, well, my family broke. Like the people who made me that like, quote unquote, loved me or whatever, that like that something in that rift established for me as a child forming my opinions and shape of how the world works, that doubt, you know? And so I wonder if there isn't something that like other children of divorce share in that like, even if you process it, even if you grow up, become mature, you're like, I know it's not like true, but that on some core level, like while your child brain is growing, that it, your child brain is like the platform of which you base your idea of, you know, what, how society and people work.
Right.
It's kind of cracked.
Well,
for
yeah,
you.
Maybe. Yeah, it could. I mean, it could even be along the lines of, you know, I mean, maybe if it's like, look, our little community didn't work and we obviously didn't fit together properly. So maybe I don't really fit in with the rest of these groups that are making me believe that I'm a part of what they're doing. You know, I don't know. I guess I never like.
I mean, because that's
investigated
another
it long enough.
Yeah,
you know?
That's another. The difference community thing. I similarly, at least through junior high and stuff, I really felt like I was the same way. Where like I was friends with everybody, but I didn't like belong to any
right.
Of the
you still
cliques.
Felt like an outsider.
And there's something in that like I joke about now that like I still feel like I find myself in quote unquote divorced parent situations where I'm friends with parties that don't like each other or problems with each other.
God, me too.
Yeah. And then you just become really good at like being like, hey, I just have my relationship with you and I have mine with them.
I just said that to somebody the other day, like Tuesday night. Yeah. Yeah. And it was more of a work kind of relationship. And it was like this one guy didn't get along with this one coordinator because of some interaction they had, but I just had an amazing experience with this guy. And I really like that guy too.
Yeah.
And you're like, well, not everybody gets along all the time, but that doesn't mean that I can't get along with both of you. And maybe that is a skill set you learn as a child of divorce. If you were able to continue to like get along with both of your parents, you know, or at least I mean, I got along with them both, or at least deal with both of the different situations, right? Like you learn how to navigate that world in it. And especially being a young man or young woman, like you're very impressionable. And so that sticks with you. And shit, maybe that is why I have an okay time navigating all these different relationships nowadays. You know, like
I definitely think that might be part. I mean, because for me, I also feel like hypersensitive to people's moods and like
if they're getting upset or
judgy or not, or you know, they get and being able to like manage and make sure everybody's happy.
Bro,
and
I get so bad to the point about I just have to share this. Like, I remember me and one of my best friends I had ever had. In this world, we did a documentary film together. We took it on tour. We had a small crew with us to shoot a web series about the adventure of releasing this film. And I remember getting on a plane, and we're all pretty young, and a train in Europe.
Yeah.
And we all have first class tickets on the train. And I remember like getting there, and we're editing and we're talking, and like we're kind of being loud, and some people are being louder than others and obnoxious. And I remember like we are still all adults and we are allowed to have a conversation, but I remember being so hypersensitive and cognizant of what the other people on the train may have thought of us and or what they were feeling. And I was always the guy that was like, oh guys, come on, let's calm down. Yeah. We don't want to, because I didn't want to adversely affect the other people on the train or like ruin their experience and make them feel bad and like feel like we were some young punks. But I do that all the time in every situation. Yeah. Like even when it doesn't like, I don't want to say it doesn't matter, because it does matter. And I think we should all be conscious of each other, right? Like just on a general human level. But even like when you're just out with your friends and you're having fun, you might not realize that like the fun you're having is like infringing on other people's like day.
Right.
And that's so, like, and I'm so and I'm the guy in that group that always is like having a good time. And then I almost ruin my own time because I'm like, oh wow, are we being shitty?
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to be that guy.
Well, like, and that is very connected to this imposter syndrome thing, I believe, because it's like, because in your mind, you're like, well, it's not bad to have self-doubt because bad people don't have self-doubt. Like, bad people don't ever question, like, am I being an asshole to the people around me or blah, blah. But so you convince yourself, like I was talking to Allie about this a long time ago. We were like, there's a kind of epidemic, it seems, around like intelligent, creative, like funny people about being depressed. And part of it seems attached to this feeling that like if they suddenly were happy or figured out how to be happy, they would be stupid. They'd be like, stupid people are happy, because that just means, because if you're happy, that means you must not be thinking about all the million bad things about the universe all the time that are constantly happening. And how could you be happy in the face of that? You know, like only a dumb person could be happy. And that, like, I don't think that's true. I think like the world is set up in a way that like you have to accept at some point that just contradictory things all exist at the same time, and that the universe has like a dialectic relationship with itself where like it's infinite factors negotiating with each other constantly. And in that flow, some sort of reality exists, but there is no stasis. There's no frozen moment in time. There's no black and white or even a spectrum on which you could put it. That like, you just have to accept that like you can know about all the bad things and also be happy somehow. And like, that's really the only way to survive it. And so you end up having to like, if you try to logically explain to yourself a way to believe in yourself while also paying attention to reality, quote unquote, or like to enjoy yourself in public and be allowed to take up space while also respecting the sovereignty of other people, like those seem contradictory to some degree. But like, they're not if you just manage them and live presently. But our mind so wants to go like, yeah, but people who don't pay attention and like just take up space of their own are rude. You're like, yeah, that's true, but not if you moderate it with also. And so it's really hard because you're asking yourself to, you're basically asking an alcoholic to drink moderately. You know, you're basically saying like, I know you're really worried that if you start being yourself and believing in yourself, that's going to make you a dumb idiot who doesn't see reality and is actually fucking up all the time. But like, you just have to accept that you can have a little bit and moderate it and it'll be fine.
I like that. No, that's great way of explaining it, though. Yeah.
I don't know. I'm just thinking about it, but it's a solid analogy. But
like,
it is why it's so hard to get out of it, because you're just like constantly, whenever you want to sort of like let yourself be like, no, I'm going to believe in myself. You're like, you're so worried that now you're one of those monsters, you know?
Oh, totally. And I think that as you're talking about this, I was thinking about it, and I've known this for a long time, and I've talked about it with my wife, and I've said it out loud to myself, but like, I tend to worry about other people more than I even worry about myself. Mm-hmm. Right. And to the point where like, I'd be the guy to step up on a project and help somebody else finish their thing because I don't want to see it fail for them.
Right.
Almost before I would even take care of myself and do my own shit.
I
would put the rest of my life on hold, which is negatively affecting maybe me and my wife and, you know, to help somebody else. And it's like, there's no benefit to me, and not that there should always be like a benefit to you if you're helping somebody, but like, I would almost put myself in a shitty situation in order to help somebody else more than myself. And that leads into also being hyper aware and conscious of like how I'm affecting other people in my day-to-day life.
Right.
And then it eventually turns into like not taking care of yourself. Right. Like not now. And I don't mean like hygienically or anything like that, but like just not paying attention to my own, like maybe mental state and mental health, because now I'm doing all this other stuff for all these other people.
Yeah.
And you got me thinking, like, does that also go back to the idea of having parents who were divorced? Because now, not necessarily my father, because he was like a very, very overbearing kind of masculine man who was growing up, was my real father was like very intense, and I could say like it would bum him out if he heard it, but like he was kind of shitty and some would say maybe a piece of shit. And later in life we had reconciled a lot, and I noticed that he realized some of the errors of his ways and have made a conscious effort to be better, like especially with myself and my sister, you know, and even my wife now. But like, I was always worried about my mom, and I was the oldest child, and I was worried about my mom and my grandmother. Yeah. And then at the same time, not worried about my father, but still worried about what he thought of me. So I was always into sports, and I played football, and I, like, you know, I played football, I ran track, I wrestled, I did martial arts. Martial arts was my thing, but like, I loved playing football, but I never wanted to be a football player. Like, it was a fun thing to do, but I did that because I was more worried about what my dad thought about me.
Yeah.
And I always remember him, oh, so-and-so's boy could throw a football this far. He could do that. Oh, he, and so I think it was like, the more I think about it is like, I was worried about what he thought. So opposed to just doing what made me happy, I tried to do the thing that would make him happy, because I wanted him to accept me and be happy and proud of his kids. And what I really loved doing more than anything in the world was martial arts. And like, so I did that, you know, and, but I was always worried about my mother and her finances and how she was taking care of us. And so maybe those things did bleed into me now as an adult, and now I care about other people more than myself most of the time.
Yeah.
Because growing up, I was always so worried about somebody else, you know?
Yeah. I mean, that, you know, the idea, well, to quick little thing about that, I'll just say, I've been thinking about a lot lately is this phrase. I used to think a lot about like putting your oxygen mask on before you can help other people, like the plane analogy,
right?
Which is really hard to like really get through your head as somebody who's this kind of codependent. But what you're describing is basically kind of a codependent cycles, and you know, not necessarily like terrible versions of them, but I'll get to that in a second. But like, it's really hard to understand truly that like, it's not helpful to somebody to help them breathe if you can't breathe, because then you're just going to create a problem that they have to deal with next.
Right.
But now I've been thinking about an easier way for me to accept it is just don't light yourself on fire to warm someone else. That it's like, it's not helpful. And like, you,
that's a heavy way to think about it, but it's a seriously amazing analogy. Well, yeah. Like, I get that. Like,
definitely. Like, yes. Figure out how to make fires, figure out how to help other people be warm, share that light, but it's not helpful to, so the codependent thing, I've had a lot of experience thinking about this as I've broken it down. One way early, somebody explained codependency to me, which is the most toxic kind of version of it that also I related to, was that you keep someone sick so that they always need you to help them be better. Which is like, so that's like the crab in the bucket stuff, you know, like as soon as somebody starts to get out of a situation, you figure out a way to like blow it up a little bit and then we have to heal. And so in a relationship, it's that cycle of like big explosive fights and then like reconciling, and we're working it out together and we made up and it feels so good to make up. But then it's kind of stasis again. So we need to fuck it up again. But there's this other one I've realized, cause I've been thinking about a lot in my family dynamic, which this isn't me particularly, but people in my family have been really affected by this, where in your brain, you're like, I think of other people first. I help them out first. I'm a good person who does that. That's what a good person does. I've noticed this pattern in myself and in my family members where it's like, you're basically seeding a really lovely resentment plant, because you can, but I don't pay attention to taking care of myself at all. I'm putting all this time into helping you out, knowing you're not going to appreciate it, you know, on some level. Yeah. And that's part of what makes me a good person, is I do this noble thing where like I put all my energy into somebody else's thing, and like not even for reward, just because I'm a good person. But it's perfectly setting yourself up for a situation where down the road, you start to go like resent. You're like, why am I fucking doing all this stuff for you, and you don't even care, and I have my things I'm not doing. And so you've basically created a perfect cycle to go like, and now I'm all fucked up and I'm kind of irritated, and it's going to create a situation where someone else needs to help me, and da, da, da. And like, in this way we can create this cycle for ourselves to constantly recreate like our childhood situations where we're like in an impossible situation where other people didn't think about us and they had a rift and they couldn't take care of us. And so we would go like, oh, I'm going to take care of them, but I'm a child, so I'm never going to be able to actually take care of you. And then I'll be able to be mad at you my whole life because I have this thing. And like, we become comfortable in this, like, you know, we become comfortable in that crisis. We become comfortable in the having a problem to solve, which I wonder if that's not why we aren't attracted to, like, why we feel fine as long as we're working, but then not if we're not. Because if you're working, there's always problems to solve.
Oh, and
there's puzzles.
And
we're doing it.
And especially in what, like in the entertainment industry, which we work, is like, that's all you do. And people on set say it all the time, right? Oh, we're problem solvers, making movies, making
right.
It's just solving problems. And that's actually the truth. You're telling stories by solving the issues that arise.
Totally.
That get in the way of telling the freaking story.
The problem, the story here is the ladder, the story of the ladder.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's so interesting. As a side, that is actually interesting, but I'll just leave it out there and let it hang. People be like, oh, what's the story of the ladder?
what is the ladder story?
But anyway, you know what I mean? Like that's a thing that we have to like, pay attention to that, like, how are we using the excuse? Because I think that I think is the problem, the danger of like imposter syndrome and these kind of things, or the irony of it from a narcissism standpoint, is like self-hate is, I think, way more toxic than self-love when you talk about like narcissism.
Oh.
Because like, you know what I'm saying? You know what I mean?
Totally.
Because you're still as obsessed, like, if all you think about is like, what a piece of shit you are, and I'm not good enough, blah, 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 you're like, not only are you just thinking about yourself all the time, but you're doing it in this way that's like poisonous to everybody around you.
Oh, definitely. Yeah,
at least somebody who's got self-love in a narcissistic way might inspire some other people who are like, oh, at least like they can love themselves.
Well, you know, what's funny is like thinking about it, like from the perspective of codependency and then also relating that back to the imposter syndrome is like, I think part of it, like I'm having these like mini revelations as I'm listening to you. And like, I think part of it for me is I think I help other people because I feel like I'm good at that and I can help other people do things in their lives and fix things or get a project done. And I'm like, oh no, I'm good at that. I'm good at helping other people, which keeps me from doing my own things sometimes because I'm afraid to do those things because mm-hmm. I'm afraid of failing because I sometimes think, well, the only reason I'm good at that is because like, for example, let's say you're doing a thing and I'm helping you and I'm even putting my life aside to help you do mm-hmm. your thing. I go, no, but like I did it with you. And like, that's why I was good at it. Like, I'm not good at it on my own. I'm just good at it because we did it together.
You collabed, yeah.
And then there's like this, and the reason I bring this up is because I went through this, the last 2 years of my life have been like really, I don't know. It's kind of hard to talk about, but like I have this best friend.
Yeah. You don't feel like you have to like be, I know this one's actually, we're getting a little more personal therapy with each other than I usually do.
I know.
I just don't want you to feel like you have to divulge anything.
No, but it very much relates to kind of what we were talking about. It's like, I had this best friend that we did a bunch of awesome projects together. Yeah. Right. And independently, we were both very creative people and we got together and we started doing some stuff. And then that relationship just ended. And one thing that really fucked me up was it when it ended and I finally, and it just ended abruptly and we were very close. And when I finally asked like, hey, what's going on? I was told that, well, I'm changing my life and I'm cutting all the negative people out of my life. And you're a very negative person and wow. I can't hang out with you anymore. And I went, holy shit. And I was like, am I a fucking negative person? Like,
wow.
I thought I was fairly positive. And I like you said, like, I always try to be inspiring. And I'm a guy who thinks like, fuck it. We have $10. Let's make a $20 million movie. Yeah. We can do that. Right. It's possible, you know? And so that like made me kind of do some self-reflection. And when I started looking into myself and trying to figure this out, like then I, like that caused me, I think, to go back to a place of self-doubt because I had this great run for a number of years where I was getting shit done. I was super confident. Maybe I wasn't thinking about it because I was keeping myself busy. And then like one of the most important people in my life told me this and I went, fuck, like that really made me. Mm-hmm. And still to this day, I don't think he realizes how much that made me doubt myself.
You know,
right? It sent me into this spiral for like 2 years where I just like stepped away from shit. It's kind of the time that we met, which actually was good because then I was like, oh, cool. There's other people I can do creative stuff with. But like it even affected me. Like I have all these ideas and I've done a few things this year. And I've been like, I've even said internally, like, holy shit, can you do this? Or is the only reason you were successful was because the other person that you were doing all these things with for the last like 4 or 5 years was actually the catalyst. Like, was he the one that really made all this stuff happen and you were just along for the ride, or was it mutual, or, you know? And it really actually made me like consider who I am and where I was and whether or not I was good enough because I had this person in my life that was so important. Like almost just say like, hey dude, you know, like,
yeah. Did he said like he said, I'm cutting tax people out of your life and you're one of them. That was like a thing. Yeah.
Very close to that. I was like, wow.
To me, that's a red flag because like here's my, it's like this. It's like if somebody is breaking up with you The joke is like, I never want to talk to you again. And then the little talking bubble on the screen, you know, like if somebody never wants, if somebody tells you, I never want to talk to you again. Well, really? Because you just did that. Like if you really are working on yourself, it's not about fucking up the other people who did stuff to you. It's not like AA in reverse where you're doing amends and you go tell people I'm sorry. If you decide that people aren't good for you in your life and it's sincere and you're really doing that, you just start going your own way. You don't go out of your way to tell them
no, totally.
You're a fucking problem. I mean, I will say part of that red flag for me is like instead of looking at your life and what's not going good with it and what you'd like to be better and like are some people or partnerships good for me or not, whatever, if the answer to that is like, nah, it's these other people. Not usually. That doesn't mean don't sever relationships. It just means you quietly.
No,
so
true.
I'm saying, first of all, not even speaking from personal experience of like who you seem to be in the world and in professional capacities either, which is exactly what you described as somebody who's like always positive and always like trying. You know what I mean? Like I just, the idea that you're like a negative presence is very bizarre to me. Like, I just don't know.
Dude, it threw me for a loop, but it really made me like, I'm telling you, like there's like 2 years where I was like, holy shit.
But I wanted to stay on that because like, I'm noticing a lot of parallels to my own life with like the divorced parents thing and stuff like that, that I truly believe. And I'm thinking about the thing about friend groups where like you love everybody, but you don't really feel close to anybody, that like, that resonates with me also. And I think there's like a self-protective quality of like, when you know that things could, go bad, like, because that's already your core demonstration of relationship and family is one that has done that. I think two things happen. One, you on some level make do with what you got and try to make the best out of every situation by being positive and liking everybody, but you also keep a little bit of distance where you know, like, I don't really belong here and I'm not really going to fully commit here and I'm actually going to have a lot of pots boiling all the time just because when one goes fucked up, dude, I'll have things.
That...
Right,
bro.
And then the other one is you find people who will fulfill the cycle of the breaking again, who like will are people who on some subconscious level, you know, one day are gonna fuck right off and blame it on you and do the thing that, because then you'll have more fodder for the self-doubt that like while you were forming as a person was put in you. So that feels comfortable and natural. Do you know what I'm saying?
Oh, totally.
So you find places to get it again. Like it's kind of the way like I feel like I was raised there, like it was constant flux and crisis and weirdness. And in relationship, I've had to learn how to just be okay instead of creating problems, because being in a problem feels like home to me. And I'm like, I'll feel more comfortable if things are really crazy. So like, yeah. I'll just kind of set little fires when things are, and I've had to learn to go like, no, don't set fires for no reason. So you know what I mean? So to me, like you perfectly had it, like your closest creative partner was somebody that like eventually, finally, you got what you really needed out of it, which was 2 more years of reason to doubt yourself. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. No,
like, I just think I've done that.
Oh,
like
almost to a T, you're describing.
And
you even talked about like having many pots boiling. Like one of my, and I say the only thing I'm the most afraid of in my entire life is being stuck anywhere and not having an out. And like, that sounds so nuts. I'm married. I don't want to think about an out. Like I fucking love my wife. I've been married for almost 3 years. We've been together for 10, we've known each other for 11. And I don't, when I say I'm looking like I'd never want to be stuck in anything, it doesn't necessarily mean a relationship, but I even mean like creatively in projects.
Yes.
And I'm like, dude, that wrestling show that you helped me with, right? We do this wrestling show. I fucking spend my own money. I shoot a promo. We get together. We shoot a pilot episode. We have 300 something people come out to the live taping of this thing. And then all of a sudden, like we start kind of getting little offers here and there and then this thing and that thing. And I tell my other partner on that show, I go, you know, dude, I mean, look, I just want to do the initial 5 episodes. I'll stay on as a creator, but like not trying to do this show forever. And like, what, am I crazy? Like, I don't want to get stuck in doing a TV show that I created. Is that like, it's such a silly thing? I want out of this. Like,
I know.
Get me out of here.
I do the same thing. Like, I feel like I have a million things going on all the time.
Because you don't want to just do one of
them
because you're afraid.
I'm afraid if I pick one that I love, two things will happen. One, it'll fail and I'll realize that I'm a fake and the things that I love and the things that I'm actually not good and I've really put my heart into something and I'm like, oh, been found wanting.
And then are you also, let me ask you this, like, like, now I'm interviewing you. Yeah, are you also afraid? And is there a part of you that's afraid of it going great?
Yes. Because then the other thing is it goes great. And then you're like, oh, fuck. Now I have to stay here and take care of this thing I love. And also I'm going to be defined by this thing I love and be like, oh, that's who I am. And then suddenly like a million other things. The reality is you'll still be the million other things you are. Right. And one thing going well only empowers you to make all those other things. But you'll be like, no, now I'm going to have to do this. That's so funny. Because like as a result, like, yeah, anytime something's starting to get momentum, you go like, I've done that. Like I've hit like six, I don't know, so how many videos like go fucking viral like crazy. And any sane person would be like, I'm going to just capitalize on that. People like that. Let's do more of that. And I'm like, I'd rather kill myself. I can't do it.
You're like, nope.
No, I don't want to do that. That's so stupid. But also I think that partly, part of me is not wrong because part of me also thinks like, instead of digging into my psyche and ideas and going like, what do I have to offer? What do I really want to say? I stay sort of surface level and ideas, things that I want to do tend to be like, I could do that. That's a clever little idea. Let me do that.
And leaning into the successful idea sometimes is the idea of the imposter syndrome. It's the idea of selling out. You're like, I don't want to be that guy because that's not like, if I just lean into this, then I'm not being true to who I am and I'm just kind of faking it and selling out.
Yes, that is true. But like, I think that's also like part of the reason the thing even gets made in the first place is because you're non-committal to it because you're like, well, this isn't who I really am. This is just kind of silly or kind of cool or kind of an idea. So you feel comfortable enough
to do it.
Yeah. And so you're comfortable enough to do it and then you commit in a weird... It's, you know what it's like? It's like in jiu-jitsu. I was doing jiu-jitsu last night. I was thinking about it and one of my coaches wants me to do the ADCC trials and I'm like thinking about just saying fuck it and doing it. And I realized when I roll, I was like, I'm just going to treat it like, because one of my buddies is doing it, I'm going to treat it like I'm training him. And whenever I do rounds where I'm like, the other person's getting ready for a tournament, I'm like, I shoot so much. I do so many takedown attempts. I burn out my energy. I just go. Because I want to push the pace for them. Even when I'm tired, I just try to present an aggressive front. And I weirdly do better than when I'm just playing my game like smart because I have none. It's like, because fuck it. Because I'm like, I don't really care. My ego's not involved. It's not like I'm trying to be good or win. It's like I'm trying to just push and help somebody. So you're like a better version of yourself. Whereas like, well, why don't I just operate with that freedom?
Yeah, for why, my why own don't self? I just say fuck it for me more often?
Yeah, and like, just like go,
and that's not a
pace.
Bad thing, you know? Yeah. Like I guess like it feels, and it goes back to the conversation we had a little bit earlier about like, about the fine line, right? Of enjoying yourself and being confident enough in yourself to have some fun while also being cognizant of how other people feel, but not letting that feeling be so overbearing that you're not having fun anymore and you're not enjoying yourself.
Yeah.
And you're starting to doubt, like
even saying it out loud, you start to go like, oh my God, and that's going to be so complicated to manage all the time.
I know. I was thinking that as you said that, that's exactly what I was thinking.
But it's just so funny. And then we've overwhelmed ourselves again to just go like, ah, dude, but I think it's like a way you have to like turn your brain off and just go like, zen out a little bit, you know?
I don't know. That's maybe the thing that I gets me to the point. And then this is what I do. And then I sit around and I'm doing it with you now. And I go, fuck, man. Well, I don't know what do I do about that? Like, how do I do that? Like, and then you get stuck in this rut of like sitting there and like thinking like, well, maybe I found it. Maybe I found out why I feel this way and why I think about things this way. But like, how do I do
with that?
Yeah. Now what do I do?
Yeah,
you know, and you go, holy shit, now what do I do? And then something else comes along and it keeps you busy for a while. And then your mind's off of it. And then you sit with yourself for a week or two in between some things. And then you start feeling the same way. And then and it's not like,
I wonder that sometimes about therapy and stuff too, where I'm like, what is the magic power in talk therapy? Like, I've always preferred therapies and like, and I think why I like the psychiatry kind of thing of the medication or like when I've done EMDR, which is like this, you know, they're physicalized. There's like techniques that you learn that help you. I'm like, I have answers to some of like when things become overwhelming for me or whatever. But I'm like, what is the value in the talking or the, like, how does that work? And I really do believe there's it's almost like humans, I think in general, psychologically, like, we're really actually very good at dealing with things we're afraid of if we can see them. It's when it's unknown that it's not. So even in like interpersonal relationships, if you're scared to tell someone something, you're worried how they're going to react or whatever, and this and they know something's up and you don't say it and they don't say it, it's much scarier because it becomes the worst possible thing. And just by giving voice to a thing and giving life and body to it sometimes can have a healing quality where you can move forward now. And so to me, that's like, there's a weird like kind of quality of like that question of like, well, what now isn't really even, you're like, don't worry about it. Like the work you've done is in naming the feeling and naming the issue and understanding this mechanism. And I think the work then that you do is like in your life now, when that comes up again and you go like, oh, I don't really, well, you go like, well, you talked yourself through this already, didn't you? We kind of figured out some of this stuff and we kind of figured out like, oh yeah, when I was a kid, my brain was shaped by my fucking broken family and I learned some things about myself and core values of how I think the world works. And that's fine. It's just because I was a little baby and my brain was shaping and we're all just these like weird, we're still babies just who have been around a long time and learned and added to what we've learned. And I think you can go like, so I know why I have that reaction and now I'm a grown up and I can say, oh, so unfortunately that was the one I got first, but there are other possibilities. Let's continue with the day. Maybe I'm a good person. You know what I mean?
I hope so.
But you know what I'm saying? That idea of like, well, next time my head goes like, you're bad, you're bad, you're bad, you're a fraud, that like, you can go like, well, I've talked through this with myself a lot and I figured out why I think that's true all the time.
Yeah, hearing it out loud like does make a big difference. And some of the things, like even just sitting here talking to you in our pseudo therapy session, and that is supposed to just be a conversation, you know, a discussion. No, it's like, I mean, hearing it out loud like makes it more physical. And if it's, and if, and I'm such a tangible person, I need physical things. And even just hearing it is the equivalent of seeing it, right?
You're afraid of ghosts?
Oh, bro, I could tell you some stories.
Really? Wait, maybe we should do that. No, I just say that because when I was a kid, I was always like, ghosts are the scariest thing.
Oh, dude.
Because in my idiot brain as like a 10-year-old, I was like, I could fight a werewolf or like a vampire's thing. I was like, you could cut him up.
How do I deal with a ghost? I'm not a ghostbuster.
A ghost will just fucking haunt you forever. Like there's nothing you can do about a ghost.
Straight up poltergeist might enter your system and fuck shit up.
Yeah, and I was just like, the fact that it was intangible was so scary to me.
Oh, dude,
because I'm such a physical person.
I was terrified of ghosts, and I definitely believed in them, and I still believe in some weird shit.
Like, do you want to share some ghost stories? I have some fucking weird ones, too.
Yes.
My, I don't know, let's see. The one that was, like, this is actually apropos to what we're talking about, because I was so terrified of the idea of ghosts, but, like, one time... So, but like just horrified, like people would tell me their stories and I always get chills and I'd be like, oh, it's too scary. I don't like this at all. And then I felt like I met a ghost and what happened was I was in Wisconsin, Milwaukee, and we were staying at my aunt's. My family's very kooky. So technically my step grandma, who's been my grandma my whole life, her sister is remarried and they have a kid. And so we're at their house. So it's like their, you know, their fucking house in Milwaukee. And it's this old house. And I was staying there. It was the summer and it gets really humid. You're from Michigan. So, you know, like it's really humid in the Midwest. It's like humid and hot. And we were staying in this guest room in this old house. And me and my girlfriend at the time, and in the middle of the night, I remember I'm like laying there, I'm kind of like asleep, like asleep already, but like a half asleep, whatever. And it gets so fucking cold in the room, and I don't even think about that because I'm like, you're just asleep, and you're just like tucked up, and you're pulling your blanket up. You're like, oh, so cold in the room, and then the clock radio just starts flicking on and off, and going like. Like you know, making like static sounds on and off. And I swear to God, I heard the click, like the knob, like, you know, and I was like, and my girlfriend, she goes, Jared, I think there's a ghost in the room. And like scared though, like in this voice. And I just didn't open my eyes. I was just like, and I was going, oh no. I was like, and I knew, I was like, don't open your eyes. You don't want to see it. If it's there, I don't want to see it. But in my state, I wasn't like even scared. I just was like, just don't open your eyes. And I was just like, no, it's a friendly ghost. It's fine. It's a friendly ghost. And basically just went back to bed and that was it. I like didn't feel scared at all. I was just like, it's a friendly ghost. It's fine. But also was like, and the next morning I went to my cousin and I was like, hey, is this weird thing happened last night? And she goes like, oh yeah, that room's haunted. And we're like,
dude,
what? And we're like, and she's like, oh yeah. And we're like, first of all, thanks for putting us in that room, I guess. And she's like, yeah, sometimes I'll be in the house and I'm the only one here with Kyle, I have a brother named Kyle, but it's confusing because there is a dog named Kyle, the golden retriever, and Kyle's with me. So I know it's not him. And it's like, sounds like bowling balls are getting dropped in that room. And I was like, Fuck that.
That is some weird shit. What is up with the Midwest? I mean, look, dude,
Midwest, I would say what's up with the Midwest is probably like hundreds of years of murder and taking people's shit and living there and then like building homes and adding like puritanical weird shit on top of it.
For real.
Like everything's fine.
It would have been 2000. Because one of my best friend's father had just passed away on New Year's Day of 2000. He was battling a brain tumor cancer, and he passed away on New Year's Day. And so my mom was letting us stay with our dad. And long story short, my father's family, there's like 11 brothers and sisters, and they had a home that they all grew up on this piece of property in Flint, Michigan. And then right across the yard was one of my aunts. Mm. Built a house and her and her kids lived in that, grew up. She passed away from cancer when I was probably 6 years old, 6 or 7 years old. So I'm staying in this house now. It's 2000. So I don't even know how old I was. Staying upstairs in my cousin's room. She's a grown woman at the time. She's probably 30. I'm a young adult and I'm sleeping in her bed. She's staying downstairs and I start hearing the stairs creak, and they're those super steep old stairs, right? I'm hearing creaky stairs, and I try to justify it. I'm like, oh, the house is settling. The house is like 40 years old, Oh, the house is settling. Creaky, creaky, creaky. Then I hear things moving around, and it's in my little cousin's room, which is directly across the way from my other, her mother's room that I'm staying in. I'm like, don't look, don't look. I'm doing the whole don't look thing. And then finally I'm like, just look, because I had seen what I thought was a shadow go across. Ooh. And I thought it was maybe one of my other cousins or uncles. Nobody's there. And I look in the room and I swear these little figurines that are on my cousin's bureau are moving. Mm-hmm. And I about shit my pants. Dude. I freak out. I go downstairs. I tell my dad, blah, blah, blah. Shit's moving. I was hearing noises, whatever. He's like, it's an old house. The house creaks, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, no, you don't understand. I was like, I looked into Amanda's room and I saw shit moving on her bureau. And he's like, go to bed, right? And I'm like, fuck, I can't go to sleep. So finally pass out. I wake up. I'm telling my cousin about this the next day. And she goes, oh yeah, it's my mother. And I said, what are you talking about? She goes, no, sometimes she cleans the kids' rooms, because I had two younger cousins. And I was like, what are you talking about? And she goes, no, sometimes I leave the house and I'll come back and the rooms will be completely clean. Nobody else lives in this room. And I was, and my dad the whole time was like, oh, it's bullshit. You're making it up, whatever. But my cousin who owns the home straight up said, it's my mother. And she really thinks that her presence stayed in the house and looks after the kids.
Yeah. I got chills like three times.
Holy crap. Like that got me so good.
Yeah.
Like I've had a bunch of really weird instances. Like when I was a child, but all the way up until I was like a teenager. And like my friends and I had seen some weird shit that we were like of driving age and we thought we saw some weird shit. Like,
right.
I don't know. There's,
yeah,
we don't know it all. There's some weird shit out there in the universe.
I definitely think that. Well, cause I think that about like there's weird shit happening too. Like, I don't know if you saw there's this viral thing the other day about people in these video clip from a TV show in 1958 where this like town, it's like a Western show, and this huckster comes to town and tells everybody the world's gonna end, and like these fiery comets, and there's gonna be like in fire, the world's gonna end. And he tries and he sells the town. He wants to sell them on building this wall around the town. And this other guy is like, this man's a liar and he's lying to all of you, and he's like trying to stop them. And the guy's name is Trump. Like Trump is, and this guy Trump is trying to, and you're like, how in like 1958 did somebody make, that's like so like we're living in a simulation. It's very weird and long and spooky. And now that's like happening.
West
like this
world,
guy Trump,
dude.
It does feel that way. And I was thinking like time, like we can only perceive time in one direction. But like if you drop a rock in a pond, right? Those ripples go every direction. And sometimes I'm like, I wonder if there isn't some quantum thing that we can't understand that's like, if something in the future really big happens, like if that doesn't ripple out, and that some people would be like tuning forks for it, would like not be able to explain it, but just pick some stuff up and are like, what are dreams? You know what I mean? Like this idea that when you have those dreams where you're like convinced it's or like deja vu. Like deja vu is always weird to me that I'm like, it's so fucking weird that everybody experiences deja vu and just goes like, oh yeah, that thing where you have the exact same thing happens again. Yeah, we all do that. And like, don't have an answer for it. It's just like, that's a thing that happens.
That's a good one. Dude, I could go on. I mean,
but you know what I mean? That is like,
I'm sure we've all had some gnarly deja vu, like all of us. And the way that people try to explain it sometimes is like, oh yeah, but you're manifesting the dream after it happened. Your subconscious does this thing where it implants essentially an artificial memory of a dream of this situation. And you're like, no.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah.
Nope. I don't think that's what it is. Yeah. Doesn't feel that way.
That's like, to me, it's like when people tell, like, I don't know. I always think of just like love as an explanation for there's more stuff where you're like, yeah, you can tell me that it's just chemicals and it tricks me and all this stuff, but like, it doesn't always make sense.
No.
You know, it doesn't always like have anything to do with like protecting my genetics or whatever. You know what I mean? Anyway, let's do the six quick cues part of the thing. So the first one of the six quick cues, do you want to pee or anything? Do you need to break anything?
I do need to pee, actually.
All right, we'll take a quick little pee break.
I drank a coffee and two cups of tea.
Right? All right, here we go. Hello. Hi, we're back. Okay. Good pee, bro.
Hey,
we peed together.
Yeah, good job.
Just sword fighting. six quick cues. So the first one is that one of like, have you been diagnosed with anything? But if not, like what do you think you struggle with? And we kind of talked about it throughout, but what would you say?
No, never been diagnosed with anything clinically, but I think that I do definitely have some serious self-doubt issues that may have now stemmed from, you know, like early childhood when my parents split up, you know, and it manifests itself in different ways. And I think that I'm already thinking about it. And from time to time, instances like with this friend or other things that happen in my life are external factors that bring it even more to the forefront of my mind.
Yeah.
You know,
well, there is something I think of the inability, like the idea for some of us, how long it takes to process like you were saying, like it's been like 2 years and this is a thing that you think about that. Like, I do think there's something in there that, I don't know, there might not be a term for it, like depression or whatever. I don't know. But like do you know what I mean? Like, there's something impeded in the ability to process out, like, is this true or not?
Yeah. And yeah, no, I could agree with that, where I'm just continuing to hang on to it. It's less now, but obviously I brought it up. It's something that I'm still thinking about and it is a constant on my mind.
Well, I mean, heartbreak and stuff is something that a lot of people carry for way long, sometimes never let go of, you know? I wonder if I should ask a therapist if there's like a name for that sort of, like, you know, like grieving and stuff. Like PTSD actually is an interesting, when Nick was here, he was explaining that like post-traumatic stress, the way it's defined is like, it has to do with how long it goes on. That basically anybody in a traumatic situation reacts basically the same way that PTSD people do. It's just a matter, like, and it's normal, like for like a few weeks or month or whatever. But that if it's persisting on beyond forever and ever, that is where it becomes this post-traumatic stress disorder. And
opposed to just post-traumatic stress.
Yes.
Like everybody encounters post-traumatic stress.
Right.
But depending on like how long.
Yeah.
Yeah, I see.
And whenever I've learned about PTSD stuff, it always resonates with me. And I think maybe it's part of my imposter syndrome too, that I'm always like, yeah, but I didn't have like a real quote unquote, like I wasn't like, you know, fucking shot at and shit. You know what I mean? I didn't kill somebody in war. So you're like, but that, a lot of those patterns of, if you think about it, you're like, well, it was a trauma and this was after a trauma and it causes me a lot of stress. And maybe there's some, and whenever I read literature about PTSD and processing it, I'm always like, yeah. That like, we have to allow ourselves to understand, like in these violence rehabilitation things that my mom was working on, they always started with like, and it was like run by these people, they work with prisoners like in San Quentin, and a lot of the people who like go through it, and it's only lifers. You have to be like a life sentence to be eligible for the program. That like, the life sentence people sometimes become teachers of it. Like they, and they'll be paroled and they'll get out of there, you know, and they go out and do this like nonviolence work. And they always start with like, you go through your own personal history of where violence has been in your life. And they're very clear. They're like, but when we talk about violence, we need to understand we're not just talking about physical violence. We're talking about emotional, mental, spiritual, obviously physical, but also economic violence, which is, you know, if you like are taken from or people take or you take from other people, like, and that the effect of violence, even for perpetrator and victim, is equal, like it's destructive. And that concept of trauma too, of being like allowing yourself to go like, ooh, something fucked up happened that really affected me. And I am not helping myself at all by being like, it's not real. I shouldn't, that's not like a real trauma. Like, yeah, it's real if it's real for you, you know? I don't know. It's, that just made me think of it. That's something in the like having difficulty processing a thing. You know, like if you were grieving over a loss or something and just never could move through all the cycles, that would be a thing. That would be like...
Absolutely.
And I don't know. So I know we're not professionals, but I do have a feeling like that there's a name. There's got to be a thing for that, you know?
Yeah. No, has to. I'm with you on that 100%.
The second question, I guess, then is always like, which kind of is on the tail of it, is therapies or medications. And if you've tried any or anything like that, or if you felt like, or even like drugs or like the therapies you might have done, or what'd you kind of do to try that you liked or didn't like coping with these like feelings?
I mean, honestly, I mean, a little bit of therapy when I was younger, it didn't last very long. You know, it was a few sessions.
Have you thought about going back as a grown up ever?
I haven't really, you know, yeah. I haven't really, but my wife's opened up and started talking about possibly, you know, like talking to someone, and that almost gave me permission to go, oh, you know what?
Like, oh, for her own self, you mean?
For her own self. And it's not even, she's like, you know, I honestly, it was in due in part to like, she was listening to your podcast again, like whenever we travel, she's like, you know, I just think it's time. It's not a bad thing. It's not for one thing in general, right. Like one specific thing. She's like, but maybe it's not bad to have a conversation with somebody on a regular basis. And that,
I recommend it for everyone.
Yeah. And that like gave me permission to like, oh, you know what? Like maybe that's not a bad idea for me either. Or even just having another close enough friend that I could confide in, you know, and just have conversations with.
That definitely, I'm pro talk in general. I will say, as a non-professional or whatever, that there is something important about, I'm not actively in talk therapy right now. I don't think it's something you have to do like for your whole life or something like that. I think some people can overuse it. I think it's good to even limit it, to be like, some people have to go a lot. They have a lot like of specific stuff to work out. But at a certain point, like, I don't think it's good if you take all your problems over to that thing. It being a professional that is paid to be there for that, there is something, it used to bother me. Like when I first started, I was like, in the most toxic patriarchal way possible, it'd be like going to a prostitute and being like, you don't really love me though. You're just faking it for the money. And now once you get a little older and you start to realize like how things work and like people have needs and they help each other. And one of those needs in our horrible capitalist system is like to stay alive, and that these exchanges are okay. And that there's a reason that it creates some distance, that like, it's not a friend that you're consulting for therapy. It's not a loved one who has other reasons to maybe talk to you a certain way. It's just a person that like, I was like, I started thinking about therapy. Sometimes it might, the fact, whatever we said in those 50 minutes might not even matter. It was just the fact that I took 50 minutes out of my week or hour and a half, right, to drive there and come home with the intention of working on being a better version of myself, that like that alone, like just saying, and I go do that. And that like just the intention of it worked in itself. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, it didn't even matter like what we said or did. We could like talk about the weather for like the whole session. But it was like, I went to therapy this week because I'm trying to be better and happier. Has some positive effect, you know?
Oh, definitely.
I recommend it for everyone. Yeah. I'm happy to hear that she was thinking about that. You're thinking about that, because there's definitely this day and age too. There's no fucking like stig. There's not like you're fucked up. And
no, not at all.
Some people don't like it though. Some people really like still like don't like to talk about, you know?
Oh, yeah.
It feels so weird.
A lot of people don't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't get that. I don't get how you can still feel that way now. I mean, I get it, obviously, but anyway, fuck that shit. The next question is, you know, feel good. Work yourself. Open yourself. Crack yourself open. What is something cheesy you find inspiring? That's always the third question.
Oh, man. That's like actually kind of a hard one.
I know.
Can I say that like your history videos that you were putting out are a little cheesy?
Which one?
The totally true history.
Oh, the absolutely true history where the I just make up true lies. History.
It's hilarious and cheesy, but I will say that watching, like, whenever you put out like cool content, like I think everything you do is cool.
Thanks,
like,
man.
Just on the sense that like you're a creative dude and you put shit out.
Thank you.
And I mean, who knows how much thought really goes into each of them? Some maybe too much and others not enough. Who knows?
Mostly not. It depends where the medium
but
is.
But I think one of them, you woke up, you're in bed, you start telling a story, you're still under the covers, yeah. You're groggy as shit. And to me, like, that's inspiring as shit because like you just had an idea and you're like, fuck it, I'm gonna put it down.
I do think that
it's like waking up and writing an idea down, but instead you just shot it and you just filmed it and it's a good and it's an inspiring reminder to me that like
that
I have
nice.
These ideas and like it's not as hard as I think to just make it happen. Like just do it, you know?
That is the gift and the curse of like new media and like that kind of stuff is because I my mom had this thing she said one time though, because the double-edged sword of it is like the one is I really appreciate that you said that because I did this like video visit. I went visited Ross the other day, Ross Dress for Less. And like every time I go to a Ross, I feel like I'm like in this weird alternate reality. And there's always just so much funny shit that just feels like it lays bare like the American psyche and all of our like extra weird products that go in overstock. But and so I do these like stupid Instagram videos and stuff. And I've done it a couple times. And the one I did the other day, like really struck a chord. Like people like, I don't know, we're really liking it. And I'm going to like repost it just because it seemed to people like it. And I was like, that's like the perfect expression. It's like you have a funny, dumb little idea and you just want to just go do it. And I had this intention when I started this year too. Is like, I want to get back to being a bit more of a silly goose again. And like, I miss being like kind of goofy and I've been feeling like really serious and bound up and just more generative. The danger to it is my mom had this thing. She calls it making molehills out of mountains, which is like, you'll have a great idea that could be like a book. Like you should really spend time working on that fucking thing and figuring it out, whatever. And instead you write like a Facebook post about it. And like, it's like, oh, some people are like, what a cool Facebook post. Oh, really interesting. Great stuff. And then that's it. You've done the idea and you got out of your system and never really served what it could be. And so for me with the art stuff is like, I feel the same way where I'm like, some things are perfectly, that's all they're supposed to be is a little fart of a creative impulse, makes people laugh a little bit and does something. But other things I'm like, when we were shooting Trigger Men, actually, was the first like short that I'd done in a while that was like a multiple day shoot. And we were like getting all this crew together to do it and all this stuff and being like, this is what I love. I want to work on things. I don't just want to do collab YouTube things. Like, you know, I want to like spend time with my ideas. But I really, anyway, that was a little
bit. Yeah, but it's 50-50. It goes both ways. It could be an idea that could be built into a mountain, and other times it is just a fun little molehill.
But especially what you're saying about like when the fear is, when you have a fear in general of like not working on your own shit and, you know, like, fuck yeah, I think about John Carpenter all the time. Like, I really want to make a feature. I want to get into making features so bad, low budget, whatever. And we were talking about before this that I was like, there's something in me that's always like, that's not the idea though. What's the idea? And that you get so bogged down in being like, my feature film is going to fix the universe and be everything I have to say as an artist, and it's going to be perfect. And then you look at like people you love who made movies, and I think of John Carpenter, just how like prolific he was and like making all these, like, you know, Halloween and Escape from Precinct 13 and like, you know, Escape from New York, or sorry, Assault on Precinct, you know what I'm talking about, The Thing. And made so many things that it was more like Stephen King or whatever. Like, they just, you have ideas and you just do them. And no one idea is going to like say who you are. Like, you just have to go make things and start making
Spielberg,
and making.
Same way. Like, until I watched his documentary, like, I knew some of like the amazing work that he had done, but I didn't realize how many films and how many television shows that man actually created. And each one speaks to who he is as an artist and who he is as a person. And like, there's like this great big collective body of work. But could you have imagined if he was just like, nope, I'm only making this movie,
right?
And it's got to be perfect, and then he only ever made one thing.
Yeah,
right? Like, it's like no, like, you can be great and you can express yourself across multiple mediums, and it doesn't have to be the perfect, each one doesn't have to be perfect, like, and stand the test of time on its own, but like together it could be a great collection of your ideas and who you are and what you're trying to say.
Yeah, just getting a sense of yourself that is not defined by single attributes.
Totally.
And understanding that, like,
that we're more.
Yeah, and only like, you know, fairly shallow beings do that. Go like, that's the person who does this, you know? Which, I don't know, that is a frustration in our industry of like, people do rely on that kind of branding. Oh, that person is this. And so that's what I go to them for when you're like, yeah, I don't know. I'll kind of figure out whatever, you know? Anyway, all right, the next question is, what's something dark about you?
Ooh. Shit, man. Something dark about me?
Yeah. That's the goth question.
No, something that is dark about me is maybe like when I start thinking of a lot of stories that I personally want to tell.
Yeah.
Most of them don't have happy endings. And I think it's like really important. Like I try to be a happy go lucky person, but I also think that a lot of times in our media, everything is perfect. Mm-hmm. And I'm not talking about the news and the bullshit that you see all the time. And right. like the news is very negative all the time. It's rarely a positive thing. Like, because right. that's, you know, that kind of fear sells. But I just mean the idea of telling personal stories that don't always end up perfect.
Yeah.
Right. And I have several shorts that I've written and concepts that I want to do, and none of them have a happy ending.
Yeah.
And I think that's maybe this little dark spot inside of me that says, hey, look, everything isn't perfect, and that's life, and that's actually okay too.
Yeah.
You know, is it doesn't yeah. have to be perfect.
Yeah.
But there is a dark tone to that. Like, I remember the first time I told my wife and my sister about some of these concepts I had, like, one super, you know, like they're, none of them are like, they all just kind of have like fucked up endings, but they're real. It's like shit that really happens in real life. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important to also remember that like, it doesn't always work out.
Yeah.
And that's okay. Life goes on, right? Yeah. Like things continue to move. It's not the end of the world, although it feels like the end of the world. Maybe that's something I need to contemplate more for myself.
Very
you know?
Interesting. Very interesting. Yeah, I think that's also why I asked the something dark about you question, is just because I think a lot of us spend a lot of time acting like we're not like grubby little psychopaths on some level somewhere in us. And I don't know, I just want to normalize a little more so people don't feel so fucking weird about like that they have these experiences, and you know that like a lot, we all have them.
Yeah.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I think like I feel similarly. Like, I don't know, you know, that's why we're doing this whole other fight stuff podcast eventually, is like, I don't know why. I just want to explore the truth, like the honesty of the fact that I'm very attracted to violence in like media and in play and in practice and in games and like whatever. But I don't like it in real life. I don't like, but I also don't think I get anything out or help anybody being like, no, violence. No, ooh, gross. No, guns. Ooh, gross. No, I don't like it. Because you're like, well, then we're just lying. Like, we need to like figure out why we feel this way. Like, well, what is it about it? And don't make it so weird. Same with like sex stuff forever. That people forever are like, you don't get anything from being all Catholic and weird out of being like, no, nobody has sex. All you get is like a church that fucks children. You know what I mean? Like, weird.
I guess I do know what you mean.
That is dark. Well, that was something dark. All right. And then bringing it up again. What is the last gorgeous thing you saw? That's my fifth question.
Man, that is a good one. You know what I could honestly say? Maybe two things.
Mm-hmm.
I woke up this morning at 6 a.m. and a friend that I made on this last show happens to live in L.A., and he got me up and had me go with him to Runyon, and I hate running. Mm-hmm. And it was super foggy morning today. Like, it was real thick air, very, yeah. very dense, and the clouds were super low. And we made it to the top of the Mulholland side. We went up Mulholland and went to the highest peak, and I watched the sun come up over the clouds, little pieces of the hill jutting out here and there. And it was absolutely beautiful and awe-inspiring and just peaceful and calm. And then I went home and I ran into my wife walking the dog before she went to work, and just seeing how stoked that little dude was to see me. Like animals just have so much love inside of them, and it's pure, you know. Yeah. And I was thinking about him today. I'm like, this little dude, I'm responsible for his life. He cannot take care of himself because he was not raised to be able to take care of himself. And he just loves us unconditionally. And I just feel like that is so gorgeous and so beautiful, is like, just like how much love this little guy has for me and my wife and most people he encounters.
Yeah.
Like there's not an ill bone in his body, and he's just so happy go lucky. And like, you know, we joke sometimes, like her and I are like, man, I wish we could just be more like him.
Yeah.
You know, like, I wish we could just love everything and everybody and chill and not worry and not stress out too much. And like, you know, just be the dog,
yeah.
you know, just like live the life of the dog. And Although I do ask him every once in a while when he's going to get a job, because it would be nice if he contributed.
Yeah, it would be nice.
And here in Hollywood is maybe one of the only places in the world the dog could actually work could and make happen. A living.
Dude, but, get an Instagram.
I know. You know, but I digress. I think those two things, just today, those were two awesome experiences that, and as much as I hate running, dude, I hate it with so much passion, which is weird because I'm such an athletic and physical person, but I hate running. I was like, you know what? I'm so grateful that I woke up this morning, or I wouldn't have been able to have that experience. Yeah. It was amazing.
Yeah. Love it. The last thing of the whole thing. I have a thing called the Don't Kill Yourself list, which I started years ago for myself. And it's kind of a practice of just like, I remind myself of things that exist that I love, that are objective to me, reasons to like keep staying in reality. It made it a very dark time in my life. And I always start it with coffee, sandwiches, and lavender soap. Those are, because I'm like, those are fucking awesome all the time. And so
I love it.
Add something or multiple, whatever you feel like, but just give me, what do you think should go on a Don't Kill Yourself list?
Well, you already did coffee.
Yep. Coffee's a common one.
Chocolate, baby.
Chocolate, really?
Yeah.
Do you love chocolate? Are you like a chocolate guy?
I'm like a connoisseur of chocolate. I think chocolate is amazing. And I mean, for me, but I mean, for you, I mean, you're very...
For you.
For me, yeah. No, I mean, chocolate would 100%... coffee and chocolate would be on mine for sure. And, you know, I mean, and... I don't know if it fits, but even my little dog, dude, I mean, like that guy, like,
yeah,
like he can't live without me, and dude, I would hate to try to put that on him. You know what I mean?
Like dog is probably the number one answer.
Like that's so,
give.
Yeah. Because like, I mean, you go, I mean, it's such a, it, like they say it all the time and maybe it is and maybe it isn't, but like, I feel like to like, it's, how shitty of me would that be to leave this little creature alone in this world, mm-hmm. you know, or even leave my wife the sole responsibility of taking care of him while having this constant reminder of me being gone. Like that would be horrendous.
Yeah.
You know, like I don't want to stick anybody with any kind of like additional responsibility because I didn't want to deal with this shit anymore, you know? Right. Coffee, chocolate, my dog.
Chocolate and dog, love it. Dude, thanks for doing this.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for having me.
If anybody wants to find you, do you want to tell them a place they can find you?
Yeah, I mean, my YouTube's horrendous. I did log in the other day and realize I have 14,000 subscribers, and I think the last time I looked at it, I had like not many.
Yeah, that's
But cool. I don't really put that content out. I'm definitely on Instagram, just Corey DeMyers on Instagram. It's okay. Stunt stuff, parkour stuff. And
Corey DeMyers.
Corey DeMyers, CorryDemeyers on Instagram.
Love
it. Creative shit.
Yeah, dude, this was a pleasure. Thanks for doing this.
Yeah, no, thank you.
All right, talk to you guys later. All right, bye.
Bro. Peace.
Well, that's the up this week. If you dug it, check out patreon.com/mygoodbadbrain. Throw some dough at the show, or maybe just leave us a review, or maybe tell a friend, or maybe don't feel like you have to do anything. Just, you know, be good to yourself. Self-care. Hydrate. Be well. Thank you. Bye.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh.
Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.